Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for November 1st, 2017. Let's go ahead and let's start with some PRs here. Let me go ahead and open this up. We got a few of them. Benoit, the optimize page map, one of yours, 2288. Is this one that's good to go, or do people need, do you need somebody to look at it and sign off who's maybe not here right now?
I think it should be good.
Okay, let's go ahead and let's merge that. Boom. Okay. Let's see. That's still being worked on. Testing for that. Let's see. Let's look at 2318. Theo opened this one. It's for adding pony version option to compile binary. That looks correct to me. You tested that and everything and made sure it does the right thing, right, Theo?
It works. Not sure about Windows.
Windows. Gordon, could you test this one out? And if it works on Windows as we expect, you could.
Sure, I'll test it out. Approve it if it works.
Okay, and merge if it's good. All right. I left a comment to that effect. All right. 2311. This one also from Benoit. Do not mutate AST when adding implicit finalizers. I am definitely not a person to comment on this one.
So this one is about, so for the record, an implicit finalizer is when you have an embedded field with a finalizer in an object without a finalizer. We need to add a finalizer because otherwise the finalizer for the embedded field won't be called. And previously we were doing that by mutating the package as AST directly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really good. Well, right now it doesn't cause any problem, but in the future, if we ever want to parallelize the compiler, it could be problematic. So if nobody feels confident about reviewing it right now, we can wait for Joe or Sylvan to take a look at it. Because it's not really pressing.
That sounds good. I'm a runtime, not a compiler person. So, yeah. Finalizers are returned void instead of none at code gen. Also yours, Benoit. 2310.
Yes. This one is just a correctness problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it can actually, I don't think the current version can cause bugs, but it's just a cleanup change. So I think we can merge this one
all right.
Right now.
Seems reasonable. Okay, boom. That one's down. 2309, also yours, Benoit. Forbid lookup on primitive int functions. Right. You're not supposed to be allowed to do that on primitives. Yeah, this looks good. I do know this one well enough.
Okay, so awesome. If it looks good to you, then
yep.
I think we can go ahead.
Boom. Yeah, that looks good. Okay. 2307. This one is mine. Basically, if you run with no block right now, we don't attempt to garbage collect actors, which will mean that if your no block is great and you can get better performance with it by not sending block messages if you don't intend for the application to shut down or whatnot. But at the same time, we never garbage collect any of the actors, which means that if you do things like receive TCP connections or whatnot, it'll never close out any of the actors for that. And this change to the runtime in Actor C will make it so that you can garbage collect actors when they're not in use anymore. Basically, if you look at this here, one, it checks to see, does this actor have an empty queue? And does it also, is its garbage collection reference count zero, i.e. nobody is holding a reference to this actor? If those two things are true, I have no messages and nobody has a reference to me, then we should be able to garbage collect it.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Yep. The general idea for this came from Sylvan, and I did the actual implementation of it. All right. Okay. Let's see. Gordon, because we have you here, 2303. How's that going? The LLVMs.
There's just one OS X build that's not working.
Really, which one?
Just for LLVM 4.0.1.
What happens?
It says, let me just look here.
Oh, it actually looks like it's consistent too. It's not able to install?
Yeah, it's not able to find the LLVM that's installed or something, which is weird because LLVM 5 works okay, so.
Let's see. Search LLVM. Sorry, search LLVM. LLVM at 4 should work. Okay, let me look at the
now
issue opens in Homebrew LLVM for this.
What there is?
Yeah.
Really? What's the issue?
It just says brew install LLVM. Oh, actually, never mind. This is for. This is LLVM H. Yeah, Haskell bindings for LLVM. It just doesn't work.
But.
Interesting. Not sure if that's related, actually.
So this.
Could be.
I'm confused by what we're looking at here. No. Okay. Oh God. All right. Okay. So it installed it. And then it did what here? It says, wait. User local seller LLVM. Oh, okay. I see the problem, Gordon. I think. Hold on. Wait one moment. All right. So, all right. So, brew blank LVM. Where's it? Okay. So, LVM5. Where is it complaining? Ah, okay, nope. So the error that's here is that it's looking in user local seller LLVM, it looks like, and it was installed in user local seller LLVM at 4. So that's curious. So let's see, we installed shell check, PCRE, LibreSSL, installing dependencies for LLVM 4 at 4. So it installs libffi, installs this. If you need, what on earth is it installing after? Well, can you drop the Theo? Can you drop the link to whatever the error was for the Haskell and the LLVM 4 bindings on? This is on OS X, right?
I believe so.
Can you drop a link to that in the chat here?
Yeah, sure.
And so just to reiterate, this fix for LLVM is not actually the correct fix. It's just kind of a workaround, and it will cause performance problems because it means that we're not always stack allocating everything that we could.
How much performance problem?
I find that it only stack allocates about 75% of objects that previously it was allocating on the stack. So I haven't measured like time performance.
That sounds like it would be rather. Gordon, I see your problem. Line 84 of Travis on install bash.
Yep.
You're forcing LLVM, the LLVM package, not the LLVM at 4 package.
At 4. Install. Okay. I'll change that.
There we go. Hey. You're going to have the same problem. You should have the same problem, I think, on 102.
Okay.
Right, where you...
Right, I'll change both of these.
I think that's it. Give that a try and see if that fixes it, because it looks like that would be it's crapping out after the install of LLVM v4. That's the next thing. So that seems like it would be the most likely thing. Okay. I suspect.
Yeah, so I'm not intending this to be mergeable right away. I just want to kind of keep it up to date with master and get it building on CI so that once we find an actual fix, we'll be ready to go.
Okay. That sounds good and reasonable. Good and reasonable. Scott, I see you on this. You're working on 2295, right? The add dtrace probes for all message push and pop operations?
The sort of after the review of source code style stuff, there was still the question of performance impact, and I've done some work on real hardware on a 6-core AMD system. Near as I can measure, this PR would add a nanosecond worth of time to a pair of push and pops, which may or may not be a problem. But pardon me, but coming up with a way of measuring the effect of the PR as is versus the effect of the PR plus also adding some if-def kludge to remove some extra function arguments in the case where detrace probes aren't available at the runtime compile time. It would be good to know if those macros are actually doing what we think they do. So I'm still in the middle of figuring this all out.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's see. So the next one is 2264. That's my generalized runtime back pressure. I've done a number of tests with this. It seems to work. It seems to work very well for controlling the sort of potential runaway memory situations that it's designed to handle, as compared to, you know, positive feedback loops, which it's simply not going to be able to handle. I think that this is at a point where I can squash it down, and that I think that Scott had made some suggestions for changes to how the detrace probes work. I think Scott, as I put on there, I'd rather do that as part of reviewing the detrace probes in general, because it seems sort of haphazard how they work in general now. And rather than making a change to that, I think it would be good to look at how we do the detrace probes in general, and then come up with a way so that it's not haphazard. Because I think even if we change that one, it's still not going to necessarily be in line with how we do others. And it would be good, as you were pointing out, you know, to have things be consistent. And I think it would be good to have a PR for that. What? Any thoughts on that, Scott?
I have no problem with doing that later.
Okay. Benoit, does that look good to you? If I was to start moving forward with the squashing that down and getting it ready to commit. I mean, to merge?
Yes.
Okay, because you're the number one viewer. So the big outstanding question then is, what documentation, if any, needs to exist for this? Like, does it need to be in the tutorial? Does it need to be anywhere? There is certainly at least a bit where there's the new back pressure primitive, which you can call from user code for when you know, due to some external event, like you know, having a blocked socket or whatever, if you were TCP connection being overloaded, that you could call. But I'm not even sure if that's something we expose in the tutorial or anything. That could be, you know, that's a bit advanced potentially for the tutorial. I'm interested in thoughts on where, if at all, this should be documented when it gets merged down.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, it would be like the server would be an advanced use of Pony. So maybe the package documentation is sufficient.
Okay, so we certainly have that. I am planning on putting together a nice commit comment for it, for how it works, and writing a blog post that can go up on the website to talk about how it works, et cetera, and everything, because I think it's a pretty cool feature and can get us some publicity. So, Theo, Scott, Gordon, Andrew Kent, does anybody have any thoughts on where this should be documented, or if what's there with the package documentation is good? I'll take that as a no. All right. We're at the end of our PRs. Before we switch off to other stuff, does anybody have anything they want to bring up and discuss? Okay. All right. Well, then I have one. Benoit, did you see issue 2317 that I opened over the weekend?
I'm taking a look. Okay, I've read it.
So, this thing right here, just memory bleeds all over the place. Sylvan and I were looking at it on Sunday, right? It's a rather minor one. It's a limited amount of code that it takes in order to make it bleed. If I share my screen, Benoit, are you in a place where you can, where you're able to see it if I share my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So let me get this. Are you familiar with how the scheduler works? If not, I'll walk you through the thing I did for the scheduler real quick first to show this. Otherwise, I'll go straight to the other thing, which I know you know about.
Yeah, I'm mainly familiar with how the scheduler works.
You are familiar with how the scheduler works, you said?
Yes.
Okay. So this is what I found, all right? It should be up here on the screen now. So I've turned off a bunch of stuff in here, Sylvan and I did, in order to narrow down what the problem is. So this does not happen with one pony. This does not happen with one scheduler thread. It happens with multiple scheduler threads, and I've been able to make this so that it turns on and off. All right. So if you see here what I'm highlighting, Benoit, what I've done in order to try and make this more so I can make this reproducible, which also makes the memory thing happen faster, is that I'm only going to allow our first pony thread to access the inject queue, and then every other pony scheduler thread is only going to steal from the first thread. You follow what's going on there, right? It will never try to hit the inject queue or anything else, which for this timer application means that only pony thread one will ever grab an actor to have run off of that inject queue. And if any other thread was ever going to get an actor, it would have to steal it. And would have to steal it from number one. Does you follow there with that, Benoit? Does that make sense? Okay. So here's the thing. If I change this so that we're trying to steal from any other scheduler that's not the one which might possibly have an actor on it, the memory leak completely goes away. All right? If I have it steal from whichever one is grabbing off of the inject queue, then the memory leak comes back. Now, the interesting part of this is I verified that at no time does an actor ever get stolen from the first scheduler, right? So the memory leak happens despite us never actually succeeding in stealing. And we narrowed it down to it's like turning this pop on or off. Ends up being the issue. It appears that that somehow in the MPMCQ pop that I have here, Benoit, we basically end up with this. The next is always, it's always null for any of these ones that are stealing, but somehow by executing this code in this one particular situation, we're bleeding memory, and Sylvan and I were looking at it, and we have zero idea why that could possibly be. We're completely stumped as to what might be going on.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll try taking a look at the MPMCQ.
Yeah. Do you want, here, let me see where I'm at with this right now. What was the number for this issue? 23, 23, 17. So I pushed that up on this branch. Sean Special Pony for 2317 that has those changes, Benoit, right? So you could play around with that and see. But yeah, it took a good while to get it to that point where it's controllable. But if you switch it so that it's not stealing from the scheduler thread that is the one that's reading off the inject queue, then the leak happens. But the leak never happens with one pony thread, which makes sense because apparently it's something to do with stealing, but specifically stealing from this one, which is right off the inject queue. I'm imagining this might be like somehow a boundary condition where there's never going to be more than one actor in for it to possibly steal. So maybe we have something that's happening when we try to steal from a scheduler and there's only one actor in its queue. That's the only thing I've been able to think of right now as a possible explanation for why this would be happening. Because if I put a timer in code which is under heavy load, I never see this type of runaway memory growth. It only seems to happen in this really much more narrowed down, limited kind of case. So yeah, Sylvan and I both looked at it. We're both really confused by what's going on. I believe Sylvan's response to the last thing I sent him on that, which is what I just went through with you, was, "This makes my head hurt. I don't understand."
Right, I'd probably be confused too. I tried taking a look, but...
Yeah. I also have another one that I'm going to be opening up an issue for that only seems to happen on OS X. Theo, you have a BSD. You have a free BSD VM, right?
Yes, I do.
All right. I'm going to contact you at some point when I open this up, because I've discovered what is either a KQ bug or it's a OS X kernel bug. And being able to, once I have a more simplified test case to do it, where you could try on BSD, where we also use KQ, would be really helpful.
Yeah, sure.
In this particular case, what it is I was doing some testing with some Wallaroo stuff to make sure that we didn't bleed memory when opening and closing TCP connections, right? And I was doing this actually as part of to make sure that that Pony no block thing for garbage collecting actors had just happened. And what I discovered was I had a program which was running and listening on a port, and then I kept connecting to it over and over again, and it worked fine. And I was reconnecting like every 5 seconds, and I dropped it down to waiting 1 second between reconnecting. And what ended up happening was that the receiving program would hang. And when I looked at it under LLDB, is when I open and close these connections really quickly, and this only happens on OS X, I can't make it happen on Linux, is that eventually the scheduler thread that I had running inside it, I was doing it with Pony threads of one, the scheduler thread disappears, it's gone, and there's only the ACO thread and the main thread still running. The program didn't crash or anything else, but where it should have three threads running inside it, it only has two. So
Okay.
Your help in narrowing that down, and I'll write it up in email and every or whatever I send over to you and see what happens. That would be good.
Yep.
At the moment, I'm assuming that it's a I'm going to assume it's an OSX thing until we can verify it on like FreeBSD or something. Alrighty, that's all I have. Joe said he might be about half an hour late. Unless folks have other stuff they would like to go over. Actually, I have one more. Benoit, do you have any thoughts on if I think there's a bug that's happening from memory getting clobbered, but Valgrind doesn't find anything? I think you've poked around looking for some in the runtime before. Do you have any advice on how to try and figure out something that might have worked for you in the past for being able to track down memory getting clobbered in the runtime?
You might try the Kang sanitizers instead of Valgrind, because my experience with them is that they are less precise than Valgrind, but they find more problems. I'm not sure if I'm very clear, but
Is there more likely to find false positives? Is that what you're saying?
No, not really. What I mean is, for example, Valgrind will give you the source code location mm-hmm. where your bug is happening, and the sanitizers will crash your program. But there are some bugs that the sanitizers are finding, but Valgrind isn't finding.
Can you send me information about which sanitizers so I have a link to that and I can look at it?
Okay. I'll send you some links.
All right. Thanks. Well, I guess then, still no Joe, but I guess we're at the end unless Gordon, anything you want to discuss?
No.
Theo?
Not right now.
Nope.
Scott?
Nope.
Benoit?
Nope, not for me. Right.
And we lost Andrew Kent. Andrew Kent, if you're listening later on with this, I was hoping to have a moment to say hi and all that, but we missed you. All right then, we'll end early here. Thanks everyone for coming, and talk to you later. All right? Bye.
See ya.
See ya.